Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Happy New Year, everyone. Here at Financial Sense, we want to wish you all a healthy and prosperous New Year. And this is our first show of the year. It's a time when we look at what the experts are thinking, from economists to Wall Street strategists, really to just give you a glimpse as to what the experts see in the year ahead for the economy. And that's the markets, interest rates, inflation, maybe even any wild cards that can throw the economic ship off course. And really, last year was a good example of that. It started off great during the first month of the year, but it gave it all back in a single week. But then the fundamentals of the stimulus kicked in, taking the stock market to new highs, reaching the targets most analysts had forecast at the beginning of the year. But you guessed it. By October, markets came apart at the seams. Everything from stocks to the price of oil came crashing down. So instead of gains, we ended up with single-digit losses for the major averages. Most stocks within those averages were in bear market territory, losing more than 20%. And as I mentioned, even oil crashed within a month, dropping by almost 40%. So what are the economic oracles and soothsayers saying lies ahead for this year, for 2019? A brighter outlook, sunny skies, balmy weather, or is there a brewing storm out there and a time for taking shelter? These are the issues that Jim Poplava and I are going to explore on this week's show, looking at what went askew last year, what's in store for the economy, the markets, interest rates, inflation, and what are the wild cards that can throw the consensus off course, that can change the outcome, either wreak havoc or surprise to the upside. We'll look at it all, and we'll give you the thoughts of the best minds on Wall Street, even the thoughts of those who think outside the box. But before we get to what the soothsayers are saying, Jim, let's begin with a brief discussion of what went wrong over the last quarter of 2018 that changed the outcome of what looked like another record-breaking year for the economy and the markets. Last year, your own forecast, Jim, made at the beginning of the year was to expect the unexpected. You thought it would not end up being a consensus year. So in your opinion, Jim, what do you think went wrong?
You know, Chris, if we take a look at where we were last year at this time, the Republican Congress had just passed a $1.5 trillion stimulus package. At the beginning of the year, there was an additional $300 billion of spending that was passed. Now, when you lower tax rates from 35% to 21%, the market had to expect that earnings were going to explode, which is what they did. Earnings were going up by almost 25% every single quarter. So if you look at how we began the year, you would have expected great things for 2018 following on the back of 2017. So last year pretty much followed the script of the first month of the year. Wall Street was forecasting a range of 2750 to 2850. And, you know, the surprising thing is we hit that in the first month of the year. And then all of a sudden, the first week of September, we gave it all back in just a week. But after that, the economy kicked into high gear. It peaked in the second quarter with GDP growth at 4.2%. The corporate tax cuts started kicking in, boosting profits up by 25% just about every single quarter. So by summer, it looked like, at least at that time, another record year, and most forecasts were right on target. Oil prices began to rise, as everyone recalls, during the summer, as the Fed increased its rate hikes also, which was, we're going to come back to this, it was kind of a key event. Because as the economy took off, especially with second quarter coming in at 4.2%, the Fed changed its outlook for the year from 3 rate hikes to 4. We're going to come back to that later on. So oil prices began to rise as a result of OPEC cuts and the fears of dropping Venezuelan production. And then, of course, Trump backed out of the Iranian deal and talked about within 90 days after August 6th, sanctions would go in and literally a couple million barrels could disappear off the market. So they began to crank up oil production. Things were looking pretty rosy until that Fed meeting in September, when the Fed Chairman Powell made comments that interest rates were far from neutral, and that set off a selling that ensued. As selling picked up, the machines took over, panic set in, and the technicals became divorced from the fundamentals. Earnings were still going up. The economy was still growing, none of which made a difference or were helped by comments coming from the Fed or from the White House, which granted waivers on those Iranian sanctions, which sunk the price of oil. And then on top of that, Trump's tweets calling himself the tariff president, while Chairman Powell did not back down from QT despite the widening of credit spreads. At that point, quite honestly, political aspects kicked in, along with technicals, which took us from a record stock market gains at the end of September to single-digit losses by the end of the year. So we began the year, just like this year, with optimism based on major stimulus kicking in, boosting economic growth and corporate profits, which fueled the gains in the economy and the market. So if you looked at the economic numbers, GDP, inflation, all of those things, our forecasters at the beginning of the year were pretty much right on target. But, you know, you throw in tweets, you throw in comments by the Fed, all of that began to change at the end of September as politics took over, the machines took over, waivers on sanctions, oil crashed, everything seemed to come apart, ending what looked like a bright year for investors turned into volatility storms and losses for the year.
Well, for longtime listeners, Jim, they'll know that there are some themes that you tend to hit on over time. And one of the things you often comment here on the show is that there are three drivers of financial markets. There's fundamentals, technical, and then political and geopolitical events. So based on what you just said, it sounds like this was a case of political events that were driving the outcome of markets, which ended up throwing the financial ship off course.
You know, Chris, that's exactly what happened. I mean, it began in June when the economy, remember, the economy was roaring at this time. Profits were coming in at 25%. And that encouraged, emboldened the Fed to change their outlook for the year from 3 rate hikes, which they began in January. And then they said, nope, looks like 4. And then it escalated in September with Powell's comments that the Fed was far from neutral, which implied that a lot more rate hikes were coming. In other words, the Fed seemed to be getting more aggressive. And then, of course, in December, the comments were made that, you know, they were in no way backing down from their quantitative tightening, which was removing $50 billion a month from liquidity in the markets. And he relented. Oh, it's interesting because he relented today, from those comments. There was a economic meeting with two former Fed chairmen, Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke, and of course, Powell. And Powell seemed a lot more dovish, saying that, well, you know, we could adjust QT and, we're going to be more flexible. And that was just music to the ears of investors. And we got a roaring rally. But what we saw on Friday was Powell, after seeing the market damage, walking back those comments he made in the December press conference, and as well as the ones he said in September.
Well, that was last year, Jim. Let's go ahead and move on to this year's thinking. Now, from the top of Mount Olympus, or Wall Street, what do the oracles say lies ahead for us mortal investors this year? And I want to begin with a clip of possible worries.
So if you're thinking about getting defensive now, does that suggest that you're worried about stocks in 2019? Because there are worries about earnings growth in 2019.
I'm far more worried about a recession than I am about earnings growth. This market has shown a real ability to take bad news in its stride, and a slowdown in earnings growth, as long as it was still reasonably healthy, which looks likely, is something I think it could overcome. But historically, when we've seen real pullbacks, it's come in the context of a recession. And that's something that is very possible for 2019. And that would be where I would start to worry.
And what would a modern day recession look like, say, in 2019? Because when we hear recession, it's natural to go back and think of 2008.
2008 was not a recession. 2008 was a depression. 2000 was a recession.
You know, I want to do something, Chris, a little different this year. Normally, at the beginning of the year, we take the current year, 2019, and we talk about forecast. What I want to do is extend that to 2020 as we look at what forecasts are being made right now, because those that are talking about recession are saying, hey, it could come at the end of the year, but it's going to come in 2020. Well, if you are expecting a recession in 2020, what I was looking for, what are you saying in your forecast? In other words, what are you projecting in terms of economic growth? And so that's my reason for doing that, because if you're forecasting a recession, the majority of economists, including the Fed, are still seeing growth slowing down in the economy. Now, I want to use the word slowing down, but they still see the economy growing well into 2020. There was nothing that I saw outside of maybe one country in the OECD forecast that was going to be in a recession. So if there are talks about a recession, it certainly isn't showing up in the economic forecast. Now, right now, let's take a look at what they're expecting for this year. Most economists see the economy coming in at a 2.9% growth rate for all of 2018. So let's call that 3%. For 2018, they see that dropping from 2.9% down to about 2.6%, and then slowing down to 1.9%, a little less than 2% for 2020. So a 2% growth rate in 2020 doesn't sound like a recession to me. So if there are talks about a recession, it isn't being reflected in the economic data or forecast. Everybody sees the economy slowing down as interest rates rise. But if we get down to 1.9% in 2020, quite honestly, that'll be the same level of economic growth during the Obama years. The numbers would imply, at least right now, the Fed engineers a soft landing. Now, that's something they have only done once, and that was in 1994. And if you look at what the forecasters are saying, government spending remains strong this year, reflecting the economic stimulus of tax cuts and additional spending. There's still a little over about, I think it's the figure I read, is around $240 to $260 billion that will hit the economy this year in the forms of stimulus. Now, remember, the government's fiscal year begins in October. And looking at the government's fiscal year from October to September of this year, total stimulus is going to be over $400 billion. There's still roughly about $250 billion of stimulus to hit the economy. The economists are also saying that consumer spending is expected to remain strong with wages rising. The unemployment rate is anticipated to drop further this year down to 3.6% and remain the same for 2020. So if you're looking for the economists telling you there's a recession on the horizon, it certainly, Chris, isn't reflected in what they're projecting for the economy, and certainly not for the unemployment rate, which is expected to drop down to 3.6% this year and remain there for all of next year. And the good thing for consumers is they're saying, like last year, they expect wages to rise by 3.1%. We're going to talk a little bit later on this dichotomy between what consumers are expecting and what the businesses or the CEOs of companies are saying. Two different stories.
Well, this sounds like a lot of good news, Jim. I mean, they expect the economy to slow down a bit this year, but still remain strong. In fact, even with additional rate hikes by the Fed, a 1.9% growth rate for 2020, well, that reflects the average growth rate for GDP over this decade. So if there is talk about recession, as you say, it doesn't seem to be reflected in these economic forecasts or even by the so-called esteemed oracles. The economy is expected to remain strong. The unemployment rate's heading lower. Consumers and the government, they're keeping up spending. Wages are rising. What's not to like about this picture? I mean, what are the forecasts for the rest of the economy? Let's talk about that, in particular, inflation and housing.
You know, let's begin with the Fed funds rate, because this is the big one, and especially with all those dovish comments made by ex-Fed chairman and the current one on this Friday, which ignited the big rally that we saw. I mean, talk about volatility, which is one of our themes we'll talk about next week. You know, we were down 600-something points on Thursday. We were up almost 800 points on Friday. But let's begin with the Fed funds rate. It is forecasted to rise to 3%. Now, what is that implying? It's implying that the economists believe the Fed's going to do what it said it's going to do in its December FOMC meeting, where they lowered the rate hikes from 3 to only 2 this year. Currently, the Fed funds rate is at 2.5. They're forecasting the Fed will raise rates twice this year and take the Fed funds rate to 3%. So 2 more rate hikes, which is in line with the Fed and the Fed's current thinking. Although you saw a little bit of walking away from that on Friday. For 2020, the Fed funds rate is forecast to drop to 2.95. So there's a marginal chance by the time we get to the end of 2019, things are beginning to soften and maybe the Fed backs off a bit. If we take a look at the thing that accompanies Fed funds, let's take a look at bond yields. Last year, they were forecasting 3.5%, 3.25%. We got up to 3.25% first week of October, but then yields backed off as the stock market came undone. And we're looking at lower yields with the Treasury, the 10-year Treasury backing down below 3%. So here's the way they see things this year. The 2-year note is expected to hit 3.12 in 2019, 3.15 in 2020. The 10-year note is forecasted to reach pretty much what they were predicting last year, 3.29 and 3.37 in 2020. So not an inversion of the yield curve, but definitely a flattening of the yield curve. I mean, if we hit those numbers of 3.29 for the 10 and 3.12 for the 2-year, that's roughly a spread of a little over 20 basis points. So no inversion, which would imply no recession this year or next. Now, where we stand on this Friday, the 2-year is at 2.49. So that's that's almost 3/4 of a point increase from where we stand today on the 2-year. And the 10-year is at 2.66, and they're talking about 3.29. So you're almost talking about more than 0.5% rise in the 10-year. But right now, rates have been coming down, not going up.
Well, this really bodes well, Jim. I mean, it's another good year for the economy, which sounds like it really could spill over into next year. And as I mentioned, the oracles are predicting no recession, so sounds like just maybe a slight downturn.
You know, that's pretty much the picture everybody knows, that as interest rates rise, it starts to impact borrowing. It makes it more expensive to buy a home, to buy a car, and we've certainly seen that, as we talked about with Chris Sheridan in CoreLogic in the first hour, about the slowdown in housing. Now, if we take a look at the Conference Board's economists, they also see GDP coming in around about the same, around 2.7% for the year, slightly higher than the consensus. Now, here's where they see a dichotomy. Consumers are seeing a stronger economy, while business executives perceive a riskier environment that they define by cost pressures, whether it's materials as a result of tariffs, rising wages, or higher interest rates. The growth slowdown also is expected to be global. There was a major report issued by the OECD, which is an economic outlook, and they're calling for a slowdown globally, not just here in the U.S., but around the globe, stating that economic growth, in their opinion, has peaked. So meaning it's all downhill from now on. They say they see global GDP slowing down to roughly about 3.7% in 2018 to about 3.5% in 2019, and remaining the same for 2020. So they see a slowdown everywhere you look, from the United States to Europe, China, and Japan, with a recession in Turkey. They also see international trade slowing down, reflecting the trade tensions and a slowing global economy.
Jim, let's move on to the stock market forecast. I say that because right now, we have a massive rally going on Wall Street as we speak after comments made from former Fed chairs Bernanke and Yellen, as well as current Chairman Powell. And he seems to be walking back on his recent hawkish comments, even suggesting that they might consider slowing down QT or possibly ending it. Did you see that coming?
When you see the kind of markets drift in the way, I mean, you take a look at, we went from the markets being up almost high single digits to ending up with down 5% and 6% for the year, with the vast majority of stocks being down to 20%. The Fed has got to be sitting there looking at, and with credit spreads widening, that, oh my God, are we creating another problem for ourselves? And so it's not unusual when you see this kind of action in the market to see the Fed sort of back off And we sort of got a bit of that on Friday. If you take a look at what the markets did, I mean, talk about a massive rally. The Dow was up 746 points. You saw the transports up 343. The NASDAQ was up almost 275 points and the S&P up 84, almost the opposite, if not more, than what we saw at, let's say, during the week. I mean, it's been a giant roller coaster. So I would say right now, Chris, as we begin this year, Wall Street is bullish as they usually are at the start of the year. Now let's take a look at what they're forecasting. The highest forecast for the S&P 500 this year is 3,250. UBS is bullish, forecasting earnings for the S&P 500 of $175. The lowest forecast is for 2,665. That's the lowest. So from where we ended up the year, which was roughly around 2,500, you can't find anybody that says we go lower this year, given what happened in the fourth quarter of last year. Now, that low forecast is from Wells Fargo, who sees the S&P ending out the year at 2,665. Just about everyone sees a higher market from the lows that we ended last year. The average of all these forecasts comes out to 2,975. The median is 2,980. The high is 3,250. The low, 2,665. Now, given where we ended up 2018 at 2,506, what this would imply for investors, if you throw in a 2% dividend onto capital appreciation, a 6 to 8% gain for the market on the low side, over, brace yourself for this one, over 20% if we hit the average, and over 30% if we hit those high marks. So our Wall Street seers are expecting one last grand hurrah this year before the storms arrive, possibly at the end of the year or at least next year.
Well, that's really good news because as we begin this new year, we're looking at a very bullish scenario, both for the economy and the stock market. So a year of good year, unless being the operative word, unless we get the unexpected.
You know, this year's gains can all come at once. You remember last year, we started out with a forecast of 2750 to 2850. Hell, we hit that in the first month of the year and then gave it back in a week. But we hit it again in September and it actually exceeded it. We got up to about 2900. But this year's gains could come all at once and they could be triggered by, for example, what we saw on Friday with the Fed dialing back it a bit. Let's say a resolution of the trade war with China, or it could be both of those events, which would allow the fundamentals to play out. We could get an unexpected surprise in the markets with those higher numbers on the S&P playing out. But that presupposes a number of things. Number one, the Fed goes on pause and stays there. And just don't go, hey, we're going to back off. We're going to keep things as is. And then all of a sudden, maybe oil price spikes or we get another good economic number, and all of a sudden they get hawkish again. So all that would do is just create more volatility in the markets, which is what we saw happen towards the end of the year in September, and then once again in December. It also presupposes that the trade war gets resolved and Trump doesn't pick another fight somewhere. And it also assumes that we have harmony between the Democrats and the president. So you have to ask yourself, what are the chances of all this happening? The only good news is we are now, Chris, in the middle of a presidential cycle. I think there's like over 20 candidates. I mean, it's even bigger than the Republican field was in 2016. There's over 20 candidates on the Democratic side who are announcing a possible run for the presidency. And let's take our own president. He has said he plans to run for re-election. Now, he knows if he runs for re-election when it comes to November of 2020, he's going to need a strong stock market and a strong economy if he expects to get elected. He doesn't want to end up where, let's say, George Bush ended his presidency in 2008 in the middle of a financial crisis. I mean, the Republicans didn't stand a chance, and that swept President Barack Obama into the White House. The Democrats, too, would like to capture the White House in 2020, so they need to look presidential like they can govern. So maybe this moderates some of the aberrant behavior on both sides, but it also presupposes cooperation on the Fed to finally do something intelligent other than their usual practice of crashing the airplane.
Well, Jim, that is a heck of some presupposing that Trump doesn't pick another fight and that Democrats and Republicans share harmony. I sure hope you're right. I think we'd all like to to see some of that begin to cool. But at least for the moment, the Fed chairs sound dovish today, and certainly that's good news. And as I mentioned, it's ignited a major rally on Wall Street. So like last year, we begin this year with high hopes for markets and the economy, and that's not a bad way to begin.
That's the way it looks right now as we take a look all across the board. Before we move to, let's say, outside-the-box thinking, Chris, and let's say possible wild cards that could disrupt this whole thing, I want to give our listeners a bit of the flavor of what the major investment firms are thinking, from macro views to stocks, bonds, commodities, emerging markets. And I'm just going to take some key themes here from some of the firms. Now, if we take a look at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, their theme for 2019 is risk off for stocks and bonds. Cash is going to be king. We go over to BlackRock. They see a slowdown in global growth and corporate earnings in 2019, with the U.S. economy entering a late cycle phase, so that says basically no recession. We expect the Federal Reserve's policy to become more data dependent as it nears a neutral stance, making the possibility of a pause and rate hikes a key source of uncertainty. And we saw a bit of an example of that on this Friday when we had three Fed chairmen, and all of a sudden, Powell was sounding completely dovish compared to, let's say, his press conference in December or his press conference in September. If we go overseas, let's look at Credit Suisse. Their base case for 2019 foresees only a moderate increase in U.S. yields. This suggests that U.S. fixed income investors should prepare to lengthen duration, meaning you need to go into longer-term bonds. In core bond markets outside America, where yields are far lower, duration should remain short. They expect things to tighten. In credit, the risk-return trade-off looks better for high yield than it does for investment-grade bonds. Equities should continue to outperform on the back of robust earnings. Emerging market assets should regain ground as long as the risk of U.S. rate hikes and dollar strength abates. Once again, that would be based on the Fed going on pause and maybe taking their foot off the pedal. Let's go over to Goldman Sachs. According to them, investors will reduce portfolio risk in 2019 is their theme. A flattening yield curve, modest equity market outperformance versus bonds and cash. So Goldman is still thinking stocks are going to outperform bonds and cash, and low current cash balances could continue to support risk-averse assets. And Goldman is also predicting it's going to be another mega year for stock buybacks, with all that cash still yet to be repatriated from overseas and, of course, corporate tax rates, which is going to allow companies to keep more and more of what they earn. Let's go over to J.P. Morgan. According to them, they're probably in a little bit more of the bullish camp. According to Morgan, their theme is the end is not near. Markets will behave like the end of the cycle is at hand. The Fed to continue with normalization, the Treasury curve to bearishly flatten. Credit is somewhat concerning, but likely to outperform rates. Cash and short duration should provide strong risk-adjusted returns. Going over to J.P. Morgan Asset Management, they believe significant U.S. economic outperformance is unlikely to persist through 2019. And that's pretty much a theme I read across just about everybody's pagebook for 2019. As the sugar rush of fiscal stimulus begins to wane. Remember that government stimulus of $300 billion ends in September of this year. Growth in the major developed economies looks set to reconverge over the course of 2019 to a more lackluster pace by recent standards, thanks in large part to Washington's more hostile approach to trade. Companies globally are deferring investment and becoming more hesitant about hiring. You know, think about it this way, and this is one of the contrasts I saw being made in terms of how people are viewing 2019. If you're a consumer, the unemployment rate's the lowest it's been in over four decades. Wages are going up by 3%. Jobs are plentiful, and interest rates are still modestly low comparison to the past. So they're looking at things real positive. If you are a company executive, you're dealing with material costs, rising and tightening wages, you're beginning to see things differently. And that is certainly what comes across. Let's go to a couple other firms before we wrap this up. Let's go to PIMCO. Global growth is sinking lower. So basically what PIMCO is saying here is that high growth rate that we saw in the U.S. in 2018 will not persist. The U.S. will look more like the rest of the world in 2019. They see a synchronized global slowdown in 2019 and position cautiously to anticipate opportunities ahead. I want to go to UBS. Our view is that on balance, overweight equity exposure combined with relative value trades, saying value should outperform growth, is the right positioning for the start of 2019. Now, notice they say the start of 2019. They don't say the whole year. We expect continued volatility. No kidding. Just take a look at the first week. Economic growth is slowing. Central banks are tightening policy. They're probably referring to the ECB in addition to the Fed. And political risk all pose challenges, making hedging prudent. And finally, we'll add with Vanguard. In fact, there was an article in Barron's last week from the founder of Vanguard, Jack Bogle, who says, guys, it's time to be cautious. So Vanguard's outlook is no pain, no gain, with slowing growth, disparate rates of inflation, continued policy normalization, periodic bouts of volatility in equity and fixed income markets are likely to persist throughout the year. So if you look at, Chris, the titles to many of the firm's forecast, it pretty much says it all. I mean, let me give you an example. We have titles like The Turning Point coming from Morgan Stanley to The Big Low at Merrill Lynch to J.P. Morgan's Countering the Bears to Goldman down but not out at Goldman Sachs. Everyone on the street seems to be gearing up for one last hurrah. Perhaps I can sum it up by saying this: eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Well, okay, on that happy note, Jim, let's move on to thinking outside the box. I want to talk about those forecasts that talk about unexpected events, events that deviate from normal consensus. What I mean by that, forecasts that are designed to make investors think outside consensus and the crowd. So I prepared a clip that will set the stage for a brief discussion of those who always think about the unexpected.
Byron, what are your top surprises for 2019 then?
The Fed doesn't raise rates at all. The market appreciates 15% from its opening. I don't think that's in the market.
So that was a clip of Byron Wayne, and so I want to begin with him because not only is he considered to be an astute investor and often his calls have been very prescient, but as in that clip, Byron is outright bullish for this year. But before we begin with his 2019 outside-the-box thinking, let's look at how well Byron did in 2018. Let me just go through these quickly. In 2018, he predicted China would finally cut off fuel and food shipments in North Korea. And basically, there would be some kind of cooperation. So maybe give him 50-50 on that. His number two prediction is United Kingdom. Jeremy Corbyn would become prime minister. Missed that one. Number three, the dollar finally comes to life. Real growth exceeds 3% in the U.S. Well, 2.9%. I'm going to give him a plus on that. Number four, the U.S. economy has a better year in 2017. And he said this, and he was pretty close on this. The index drops towards 2,300. We got down to about 2,350. The only difference was he thought it would end up at the end of the year by 3,000. Even when it was going down in October, he was sticking to his bullish bet. So I'm going to give him a no on that. He said the price of West Texas Intermediate crude would get close to 80. Well, it got 77. So he got that one pretty close. Inflation becomes an issue and wages increase. He got that pretty well. Wages were up 3.1%, and inflation did tick up for a while. With higher inflation, interest rates begin to rise, and he thought we would end up the year at 4%. We actually got to 3.25%. So, you know, actually, he was looking pretty good until we got till October. NAFTA and Iran agreements endure despite Trump railing against them. Well, that didn't turn out to be correct. His ninth prediction, the Republicans would lose control both of the Senate and the House. Well, he got the House part right. Nancy Pelosi is now Speaker for her second time, but the Republicans actually picked up seats in the Senate. So he got that one wrong. Number 10, Xi Jinping will broaden his authority, and the Chinese economy will slow down to 5.5. If you take a look at their official numbers, it was probably closer to 6. So I would say it was pretty close on that. So let's take a look at what he's saying for 2019. Number one, the weakening world economy encourages the Federal Reserve to stop raising the federal funds rate during the year. Inflation remains subdued, and the 10-year Treasury yield stays below 3.5%, and the yield curve remains positive. Number two, partly because of no further rate increases by the Fed and more attractive valuations as a result of the market's decline in 2018, the S&P 500 gains 15% for the year. Rallies occur, there will be corrections, but equities overall move higher. Number three, the drivers of GDP, capital spending and housing, make only modest gains in 2019. The expansion continues, but because of consumer and government spending, no recession likely, catch this, to the year 2021. So Byron Wien's forecast would line up to what we talked about earlier by our forecasters seeing GDP growth this year roughly of about 2.6%, 2.7%, and then dropping down to 1.9% in 2020. Number four, the better tone of financial markets discourages precious metals. Take note of this one if you're into precious metals. Gold drops to 1,000 as equity markets in the United States improve. Number five, the profit outlook for emerging markets brightens and investor interest intensifies because of PE ratios compared with developed markets. China leads. The Shanghai Composite, which was down over 20% last year, is up 25%. Number six, March 29th comes and goes, and there is no Brexit deal. That could be a big one. Number seven, the dollar stabilizes at year-end 2018, and the Federal Reserve stops shrinking its balance sheet. There was a bit of a hint on that if you listen to Powell, what Powell was saying on Friday, which is why the markets took off in the way they did. Number eight, the Mueller investigations bring indictments against members of the Trump Organization, but not against the president himself. Number nine, Congress, with a Democratic majority, gets more done than expected. Particularly on trade, progress is made in preserving important parts of the Affordable Care Act and immigration policy, a big stickler which is going on right now. And a federal infrastructure program will be implemented in 2020. Well, I can tell you, folks, if they're going to do something like that, it's going to be trillions of dollars, and that would certainly avoid a recession. Number 10, growth stocks continue to provide leadership in the U.S. equity market. Technology, biotech will do well as a result of strong earnings. Value stocks other than energy-related businesses disappoint because of a slowing economy. So there you have Byron Wien, who was looking pretty prescient up until late September of last year when the market came apart. And of course, you know, he did forecast that we'd probably get down to 2,300 on the S&P. We got to 2,350, so he was pretty close on that. But he remained bullish, thinking that we'd get that Santa Claus rally at the end of the year. And of course, that never happened.
Well, he really was looking pretty good until the last quarter of 2018. I mean, he got the lows for the market right, just not the rally that he was anticipating. But he also got the Fed right. So it looks like he was batting about 60%. That's not a bad track record. Who else, Jim, who else is next?
Next, we go to Saxo Bank, and they call their, you know, Byron Wien calls his 10 predictions. Saxo Bank calls theirs 10 outrageous predictions. And I want to go through some of these to give you a sort of an idea, because they really think way out of the box. But sometimes some of the things they talk about actually do happen, whether it's like things like the Arab Spring, spike in oil prices, things like that. So as always, we'll take a look at what they were talking about and saying for 2018. In 2018, they said the Fed loses independence as the Treasury takes charge. That didn't happen. The Bank of Japan forced to abandon the yield curve control. That didn't happen either. China rolls out the petro renminbi. Volatility spikes after flash crashes in the stock market. Hey, no kidding. Just take a look at what happened to volatility in February. That killed the volatility trade or shorting volatility that blew up a lot of funds. Number five, U.S. voters go hard left in 2018. Well, the left or the Democrats did take over the House, although they did not get the Senate. Number six, the Austro-Hungarian Empire threatens EU takeover. That didn't happen. Bitcoin is thrown to the wolves. Boy, did we see that. Remember when it hit 19,000 in 2017? I think when it got down into the mid 3,000 level. So they got pretty close on that. Southern Africa springs see South Africa bloom. And 9-10 cent topples Apple as the market cap king. That did not happen. And then number 10, it's their time. Women crash the glass ceiling, rising at all levels within society and within Fortune 500 companies. So something pretty close happened like that. So a couple of those things turned out to play. Now let's take a look at what they're saying for 2019. And before we do that, let's go to their clip.
It is time for Saxo Bank's outrageous prediction 2019. The theme this year is enough is enough. As always, this is an exercise of provoking you to think differently. And this year we come close to calling a revolution of the mind, because we don't think society can continue to be non-productive, greedy, and focusing only on short-term solution. The debt mountain keeps rising. The populist movement in politics is moving on and on and higher and higher and more influence. So what we call for this year will be good in terms of the changes. But as we all know, changes does not sit well with the human beings. So there will be a volatile exercise in 2019. We are, however, very optimistic. We think that things will change during the course of the year. You'll find some very, very interesting calls in these outrageous predictions. We wish you good luck in 2019.
All right, so let's take a look. I will list 10 of them briefly and then touch upon a few of them. So here's Saxo's outrageous predictions. Number one, the EU announces a debt jubilee. I'll talk about that. Prime Minister Corbyn sends the GPU US dollar to parity, meaning the pound drops to a buck. Trump tells Powell, you're fired. Germany enters recession number four. They did have their economy did contract in the third quarter. So we'll have to see what comes out with the fourth quarter. Five, check this one out. Apple secures funding and buys Tesla at $520 a share. Like to see that happen. Number six, corporate credit crunch pushes Netflix into the GE vortex. Number seven, the IMF and World Bank announce an intent to stop measuring GDP. Instead, they will focus on productivity. Number eight, a global transportation tax is enacted to combat climate change. Number nine, an X-class solar flare creates chaos and inflicts $2 trillion of damage on the global economy. Number 10, Australia launches a TARP down under after nationalizing the big four banks. Let's take a look at this. One that kind of strikes me, because I've been reading a lot, and we'll talk about this next week in our forecast. In 2019, the unsustainable level of public debt, a populist revolt, rising interest rates from European central banks, tapering and lower liquidity, and sluggish growth reopened the European debate on how to get ahead of a new crisis. Italian contagion sickens Europe. Banks as EU lurches into recession. The ECB resorts to new forward guidance where they start buying bonds. But it's not enough. And when contagion spreads to France, policymakers undertake that the US or EU faces an abyss. Germany and the rest of core Europe, which refuses to let the Eurozone fall apart, has no other choice than to back the monetization of debt. And so basically, the ECB prints money and buys government bonds. Apple secures funding for Tesla. Apple realizes if it wants to deepen its reach into lives of users, the next frontier is the automobile as cars become more digitally connected. After all, the late Steve Jobs showed that a company needs to bet big and bet wild to avoid complacency and irrelevant. So that one sort of struck me right there. But a number of these things, credit dominoes, you know, one of the areas that we're watching very closely, we'll be talking about it throughout the year, is what's going on in the credit markets. And maybe what we saw in the stock market in the fourth quarter, the widening of credit spreads, maybe that's starting to get the Fed's attention. Because as we talked about, if you take a look at the corporate bond market, that's where the crisis, if one emerges here in the U.S., that is where it will emerge from. And as I mentioned in previous programs, we've got one-third of outstanding corporate debt is rated triple B, just one notch above junk. One-third of it is junk. So two-thirds of our corporate bond market is very low quality and is very susceptible to rising interest rates and tightening credit markets, especially with the Fed withdrawing $50 billion a month out of the markets. And that was one thing that set the markets off in December when asked in a press conference. Powell basically said, nope, we're going to continue as planned. Well, he seemed to be backing away from that this Friday, which in my opinion helped to ignite this market. So some pretty different kind of ways of thinking, but many may not be as outrageous as it looks when you read these. I've seen some of theirs come true in the past.
And those are some of the out-of-the-box thinking or forecasts that are outside the norm or consensus. I always enjoy trying to anticipate some of those things because it's the surprises or the unexpected that really does tend to throw off the markets. But some of these things are likely, even probable. But Jim, in your opinion, what do you think are the big wild cards or variables that might bring on the unexpected and sadly steer this happy ship off course this year?
You know, Chris, I see four big ones. I mean, there's probably more than that, but I would say there's probably boils down to four. Number one, policy mistakes by the Fed. I mean, that's sort of an easy one because the Fed has a track record of crashing the airplane. And, you know, if you saw the Fed from September all the way through December, they were resolute. Well, they could. The economy was growing. The stock market was hitting records. They could be cocky and confident. But look what happens. Just, you know, the price of oil crashes by 40%. The stock market goes from almost double-digit gains to single-digit losses. Credit spreads widen. You've got turmoil overseas. Well, they were less cocky if you listen to all three past and present chairs of the Fed on Friday. So, you know, that still could be a mistake made by the Fed because, you know, they said they're going to be more data dependent. And one thing that goes into effect this year, every FOMC meeting will be accompanied by a press conference. So hopefully that could be either good or bad because you see how the markets react if the Fed says something that they're not expecting. And then all of a sudden, that's what happened in September, and stocks took a nosedive. So a policy mistake by the Fed would be number one. Number two would be an escalated trade war between the U.S. and China. In other words, we don't resolve this issue because, remember, Trump is threatening a 25% tariff on almost $250 billion of goods and have hinted if he gets nothing from China, that figure of $250 billion could go up to $500 billion. That would really shake the confidence of a lot of corporate CEOs. It would raise prices for a lot of Americans. So that's a big one if that doesn't get resolved. Three, political discord in Washington. In other words, the Democrats investigate versus legislate. Right now, we still have a government shutdown. I forget, what is it, 2 weeks now? We still don't have a deal. So who knows how this is going to play out? So political discord in Washington. If both parties are smart, I don't know if they want to go there because obviously if you're Trump, you're running for re-election, you want a booming economy and a booming stock market. You don't want the economy to be in a recession and to be in a bear market. Likewise, if you are Democrats offering to capture the White House, if all you can do is investigate and just create all kinds of turmoil, why are people going to vote for you? In other words, you got to have show that you can govern and have some kind of economic policy that people can latch on to. So maybe we'll get lucky there. And number four, rising oil prices. Remember, those waivers expire in April of this year. So if there's nothing going forward, if Trump says, hey, if he grants waivers to everybody again, what do you think OPEC's going to do? And we'll be talking more about what we call NOPEC a new OPEC that is emerging, which will include Russia, which between OPEC and Russia will account for nearly 50% of the world's oil production. So rising oil prices, if that happens, you could see the Fed get more hawkish on inflation, which is really stupid because there's nothing the Fed can do about oil production other than to sink the economy. But there are other events around the world that could have a minor impact. For that, I want to go to a clip from reporters at the Financial Times around the globe.
Here in India, people are on tenterhooks as the country gears up for next year's general elections, when Prime Minister Narendra Modi will be seeking a second five-year term. Predicting the outcome of Indian elections is notoriously difficult given the country's diversity. But Indians are united in the hope that they will retain their place as the world's fastest growing large economy and create more of the millions of jobs so desperately needed.
What is likely to happen in Italy in 2019? Well, at the moment, all eyes are on the spat between the Italian government and Brussels over Rome's spending plans, which have also alarmed financial markets. I think these concerns are likely to fade somewhat going into the start of 2019 and then potentially re-emerge in the build-up to the campaign for the European elections. These elections are being targeted by Matteo Salvini, the Interior Minister and leader of the League Party, as a way of boosting his political momentum on a national level.
Mexico kicks off 2019 with a brand new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He's promised sweeping change. The big hope is that he actually delivers, especially on reducing corruption and impunity.
Turkey is home to 1 million school-aged Syrian refugee children, and the country hopes to get a long way next year towards its aim of getting all of them into the mainstream Turkish education system.
Here in Moscow, the big hope for 2019 would be some kind of easing of tensions between Russia and the West that have led to 4.5 years' worth of sanctions against Moscow. In a perfect world, that would involve the conclusion of investigations in Washington, proving there was no collusion between President Donald Trump's campaign and the Russians. If sanctions were eased, that could mean foreign investors come back to Russia and trade increases, helping prop up the ruble and increasing the Russian stock market.
In a region that's always busy with news, 2019 is expected to be even more so. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has found himself embroiled in a series of overlapping investigations. Now, both he and the country are waiting to see if Attorney General Avichai Mandelblit will accept police recommendations. Secondly, both Israelis and Palestinians are waiting to see whether or not U.S. President Donald Trump will finally unveil his long-promised deal of the century. This is a promise by the White House to bring Israelis and Palestinians back to the negotiating table.
Here in the Nordic-Baltic region, 2019 will be a year of elections. There are votes in Estonia, Finland, and Denmark, with the possibility of new elections in Sweden. The hope will be that forming a viable government is possible, and for that it'll be crucial to see how much populist parties gain.
Hong Kong sits on the front line of a nascent political and economic battle between Xi Jinping's China and the West. My greatest hope is that the US and China eventually learn to live with the profound differences between them, and that perhaps the Communist Party learns that by taking a softer line, it might also give itself more breathing space.
So as we conclude with this year's consensus, at least at the moment, another good year for the economy and markets and investors. So maybe this year there will be candy canes and Christmas stockings instead of a lump of coal like last year. Well, next week, we'll conclude our 2019 forecast in focus on how we see things playing out. And don't forget, last year, our theme was expect the unexpected. This year, it is fast and furious. Buckle up for a wild ride. Now, Jim, before we conclude, any final thoughts?
When I was going over all these materials during the Christmas holidays and break, I found a couple interesting things. One, Chris, was the dichotomy of views, as I pointed out earlier. Wall Street expects one last hurrah. So they're saying, you know, basically the things will work out. There's enough stimulus there. We got one hell of a correction at the end of the year. I mean, even the lowest forecast at 2665, it implies a 6-8% gain for the market. So one last hurrah on Wall Street. And when it comes to the economy, here's where you see a big dichotomy. Consumers see a stronger economy than businesses do. Executives perceive a riskier environment defined by higher cost pressures and higher interest rates. And, you know, a lot of this trade sanctions and tariffs are starting to bite into cost as well as the dollar, which is hurting overseas earnings. Remember, about 40% of the S&P 500 earnings come from overseas. But here's one I found the most interesting is the views of the uber rich. 75% of the uber rich expect a recession in the next 2 years. 25% of the uber rich think the recession begins in 2019. 50% believe it starts in 2020. Now, this is the survey results done by JP Morgan Private Wealth of 700 of its global private wealth clients around the globe. Now, they call uber rich are individuals who have liquid net worths greater than $30 million. That means cash, stocks, and bonds, not real estate. Liquid net worth of $30 million. So, I found that rather interesting that the very wealthy are expecting a recession, just about the opposite of what consumers are expecting or our economists. So, as we begin this year, we expect more volatility, more unexpected events, large and fast upswings and downswings. This week is a good example of that. Just take a look at what happened on Thursday and Friday of this week. We may end up positive if my four risk factors all end up benign or becoming benign, but you are going to need to keep your seatbelts fastened as it is going to be one bumpy ride for all investors. We'll have more to say about that next week when we discuss our views for the year. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we want to wish you and yours a very happy, healthy, and prosperous new year.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.